You're listening to the Sketchnote Army Podcast. I'm your host, Mike Rohde, the author of the Sketchnote Handbook and the Sketchnote Workbook. And this is the podcast where I chat with sketchnoters and visual thinkers and try to understand what makes them tick. Hey, Mike Rohde here. I'm teaming up with Peach Pit to give away 10 prizes in the Sketchnote Handbook 10th Birthday Giveaway. It's easy to enter the giveaway. First, you follow Peach Pit and Rohde Design on Twitter. Second, retweet at least one Sketchnote 10th birthday tweet from Peach Pit or Rohde Design. And here are the 10 prizes you could win. One coaching session with me for 30 minutes. Three signed 10th birthday edition Sketchnote handbooks. Three Sketchnote idea books and Airship Auto Quill Fineliner 6-pack pens as a set. And three Sketchnote typeface full desktop licenses. Visit rohdesign.com/giveaway to see all the details. This contest runs from November 1st to November 30th, 2022, and is open to U.S. adults only. Entries must be received by 11:59 p.m. Eastern, November 30th, 2022, and winners will be announced on December 5th, 2022. See official rules at peachpit.com/happy10. That's peachpit.com/happy10. And now, on with the show. Hey everyone, I'm here with David Neal. David, welcome to the show. Please tell us who you are and what you do.
Hey, thank you so much for having me on your show. Yep, my name is David Neal, also known as Reverend Geek Twitter and different social media platforms. And I am a software developer turned speaker and educator and nowadays, also illustrator.
Yeah, yeah. If you if you're listening to the show, I would say one of the things you're going to want to do is go in the show notes and check out the work that David does. I know that I don't know how many years ago this was, David. You did an icon, an avatar for me years ago, just as a gift, and I love that thing. I use it all over the place, and in fact, it's led to I think one friend of mine reached out and said, "Hey, who did your avatar? I want to get one." That was my friend Eric. So I would just love the style that you have. And I think that translates as well to sketchnotes, which I happened to see you posted some from an event you were attending either in person or virtually on LinkedIn. So you're definitely a sketchnoter and illustrator, and you're definitely right in our wheelhouse with visual thinking. How did you end up in the place that you are? What's your origin story? Where did you start and how did you end up here? You mentioned IT and software development and stuff, so.
Yeah. So I, you know, my journey has been, I'm sure, pretty unique. I am not a illustrator or doodler by trade or, you know, haven't done any of that in most of my adult life. So when I was a kid, of course, I doodled on papers. I had a really awesome second grade teacher who, when I doodled on like my spelling tests, she thought it was, you know, hilarious and would encourage me. And then my third grade teacher wanted nothing of that. So it kind of squashed some of my excitement about drawing. But I continued to do it when I was a kid up until, I don't know, somewhere around high school. You know, I would doodle on things, but never anything very serious. And so for a long time, I didn't draw at all. I would sometimes draw like a smiley face on my kids' birthday cards or something like that, but that was it. So fast forward, I started out in IT. I'm a software developer. I do a lot of, you know, web-based applications, and I started getting involved in the developer community, started going to events, started volunteering with a local meetup in the Nashville area where I used to live. And then I got roped into giving a presentation at the meetup. And I kind of fell in love with it. It was terrifying. I didn't, you know, I'm 100% introvert. got the tests to prove it. but it got me out of my comfort zone, and I really enjoy being able to share with people you know, my experience and, you know, help them with their tech journey. So once I got the bug to do that, I jumped in with both feet and started submitting talks to conferences and meetups all over the country and started doing a lot of speaking. And I remember one of those kind of key moments in my illustration journey. I was speaking at a conference in Louisville, Kentucky, and I think it was around 2012. I'm pretty sure it was 2012. And there was a speaker there that I went to his presentation, and he had a cartoon character that was he used in several of his slides. And my radar just went off. Like, I was, like, super engaged with this presentation. And I thought, man, this is such a cool way to present a talk. You know, I don't know about everybody else, but this was like, man, I sure wish I could do that. So I talked to the guy afterwards, and I said, man, did you draw that? And he says, no, I didn't. I've got a friend who draws, and I commissioned him to draw me a couple of these characters. I'm like, well, how much did that cost? He said, oh, it was about, you know, $50 a drawing or something like that. And I was like, oh, no, that's – I can't justify that. I can't spend that kind of money on, mm-hmm. you know, because I want lots of drawings. You can't, you know. Anyway, so that was kind of like a seed planted. Like, wow, this is a really cool way of giving a presentation. So then fast forward to the end of 2014. I had given, by that time, I'd given hundreds of talks at conferences all over. And I had gotten better as a speaker, but I felt like I was just hitting a brick wall. I wasn't getting any better. I didn't feel like I was having the impact on my audiences like I thought I should be able to. You know, people told me I was a good speaker, but I just wasn't seeing, like, people getting real excited or really engaged or you know, hearing folks going off and doing the things that I was talking about. So this existential crisis kind of thing, I started researching. I thought about taking a year off, but I was doing some research on how I could be a better speaker. And I came across a video, someone you probably know, Dan Rome, who's written several books. There was a video that he recorded at Google on extraordinary presentations with hand-drawn illustrations. And he made a case in about 40 minutes of how you could use simple shapes, lines, arrows, stick figures, and with just your basic shapes, be able to tell a story with your presentation much more effectively than using, say, clip art or whatever. The power of visualization was and by the end of his presentation, I was completely blown away. I was like, you know, I'm not an illustrator. I don't have those skills, but I could probably draw. You know, some arrows and some stick figures. I think I can do that. So I had a brand new talk coming up that I hadn't created any slides for or anything. And I said, all right, I'm going to do this. I've got an old iPad and a $5 stylus. I'm going to download some apps and I'm going to draw some stick figures and stuff for my presentation. And I set a goal for myself of, like, I'm going to do 5 slides and, you know, see how it turns out. Once I started, I couldn't stop. Like, I remember being in my hotel room the night before my presentation, and I was still furiously drawing, doing the best that I could with the very, very limited skills that I had. And the drawings were awful, right? So these were poorly drawn stick figures and, you know, just silly stuff. But what I discovered was it was still so very engaging. Like, it didn't matter how bad, if you, you know, and I don't, you know, I don't believe in bad art anymore, but it didn't matter how poorly drawn those things were. People loved it. And what I found was I was able to tell the story the way that I wanted to. I was able to use my own humor and my own the illustrations to back up the story that I wanted to tell. And the rest is kind of history. That was my stepping stone of like, this is amazing. This is very effective. And I want to keep on doing it. And one of the benefits I found that led to the sketchnote thing was, you know, when you're in school and you're taking notes and you're writing, you know, you're writing little keywords and phrases and maybe drawing a little bit of doodle or something around the notes that you're taking. When you go back and you look at those notes later on, there's something really powerful about drawing or you know, writing while you're, you know, listening or thinking about stuff. Mm-hmm. And what I found was when I was drawing those silly illustrations for the talk that I wanted to give, I was thinking about all the things that I wanted to say as I'm drawing. And when I went to give that presentation for the first time, I was kind of blown away that I had no trouble at all remembering the things that I wanted to say. Like, I no longer needed notes or, wow, you know, any kind of cues or crutches around bullet points or anything like that, because that physical act of drawing while I was thinking about those things kind of solidified that information. And it made it more conversational, made it more personal, that I could just speak at ease about each of the topics, each of the things that I wanted to present throughout that presentation, which led to, like, once I realized that, I was like, I got to do more. I got to take more notes because this really helps me to learn.
Wow. And so how did the reception, so you talked about building it. Now, of course, you gave it. Obviously, drawing it helped you remember and think about the content, so you didn't need notes. What was the reception like from the audience when you gave that talk for the first time? Because that could certainly make or break, like, man, I put a lot of time into all this stuff.
Yeah.
If it's just the same thing, you might have quit, right? Obviously,
right,
guessing that that's not the case, but tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah. Well, that's exactly what happened was, like I said, I had given, you know, literally probably over 100 presentations at that point. And so I knew within the first 5 minutes that this was a game changer. Mm. The audience was far more engaged. They were smiling and enjoying, you know, they were much more entertained. And I had no trouble keeping everyone's attention throughout the entire presentation. And I had much more feedback. I had more and more people come up to me afterwards and who connected with me on social media, who, you know, continued to follow me to this day from that very first presentation. And so much that at the end of the day of that conference, I'm like walking towards my car and I see this guy running across the parking lot. I'm like, what's that guy up to? And then I realize, hey, he's running at me, you know? And so I got a little worried. What was up? So he runs up to me and he says, I was in your talk that you gave, and it's the best talk I've ever been to.
Wow.
You know, and he just starts, you know, gushing all these things about how, you know, how much he enjoyed it and how he wants to be able to do that same kind of thing. You know, he'd love to be able to use illustrations in his presentations. And I almost started crying. This guy was you know, saying all this encouragement to me, and I knew, you know, I already knew by that point, but it kind of like was the icing on the cake. Like,
yeah,
this is a game changer. This is what I'm going to continue to do from here on out. And so every presentation that I've given since, I've tried to incorporate as many hand-drawn illustrations as possible. And in some cases, I've got some talks that I give that are 100%. Every slide is hand-drawn.
Wow. That's really cool. A couple things that struck me in your story. It felt like pre this specific presentation where you decided to integrate visuals. It was almost like Groundhog Day. You went, Bill Murray wakes up and it's the same day. But he has this opportunity to get better, right? So you're obviously building your skills in some areas, but you kind of reached the plateau where it wasn't going to get better unless you did something different. And that this was sort of the game changer, like you said. The other thing that struck me is you're probably doing talks at IT and software developer conferences, and you can tell whether you got attention or not because the laptops are closed, right? Because everybody's got their laptops, and they can get lost doing coding or whatever they think is more important. So if you get those laptops shut, the more faces you see is a clear indication you got
absolutely.
Them.
Absolutely.
That's really interesting. And so where did that lead you then? So obviously this was a huge thing. You still, it sounds like you still do presentations like this. So you're still doing this, but did it branch in other directions? Obviously, I see you do sketchnoting, you do avatars. There's probably other stuff I didn't even know that you do related to this. So you're still at the badly drawn, quote, badly drawn images, right? So there had to be, because your stuff is not badly drawn, my friend. You have really great skills.
Well,
so I want to hear what is the arc of trajectory from that moment to like now? Tell us a little bit about that.
So 2015, beginning somewhere around March of 2015 was that pivotal moment in my journey. And I had been drawing for like a week or something like that up until I gave that presentation. I fell in love with it and I wanted to continue doing it. As soon as I got done with that talk and I drove back to Tennessee, I like, what can I do? How can I continue to do this? Because I love doing this. I can't create a new talk every week. That's not feasible. So what do I do now? So again, I have my little iPad, iPad Air and my stylus. And I thought, you know what? People seem to enjoy those silly drawings that I created for the presentation. I'm going to create some drawings and just post them on Twitter, stuff that's related to tech, like not cartoons, but, just funny things. Maybe try to recreate some memes or try to, draw some silly stuff. Of course, some of my passions are around guitars and bacon and, poking fun at different pieces of technology and things like that. So I kind of, without even really realizing it at the time, Twitter and other social media became my accountability partner. I used that incentive of the feedback that I would get from folks as a motivator for me to continue drawing more stuff. So I would draw silly things. I'd post them on Twitter. I'd get some reactions. One of the ones that I ended up drawing was a picture of Slash, the guitar player. And there was a front view of him holding his guitar one way, and I said, this is forward slash, and then the reverse was backslash. The position of the guitar was the same as the forward and backslash on your keyboard. And that was like my first viral drawing. I got something like 1,200 likes and retweets, and like, man, this is so cool. I even had one guy reach out to me. He wanted to buy a print of that and hang it in his office. And that's when I knew, hey, maybe I can do something with this more than just be entertaining. Maybe I can create other illustrations. So the avatar thing, that was born from me just trying to do my own avatar. Like I started, I had this, I've got an evolution of my own avatar that I put together at some point. It shows like the first one I drew of myself that looks, you know, very similar to those stick figures I used to do. And then, you know, as it progressively got better and better. And, man, I spent so much time, but I would get a lot of cool reactions from that. People would ask me about the avatar that I used on Twitter. And eventually, I decided to take a shot at drawing other people. And, you know, when I look back, I'm thinking, wow, that was a really poor idea or executed really poorly. Because, you know, maybe some of these people that I drew, you know, may have been a little bit flattered, but the drawings were not flattering at all. But some people liked them. And, you know, again, kind of that encouragement as I kept doing it and getting a little bit better. And somewhere along the way, I developed my own style. It was not my intention. It just kind of evolved without even me thinking about it. And eventually, I got confident and good enough at doing it that I want to say it was around 2017. I created a post on Twitter, and I said, "I'm running a sale for the next 2 weeks. You can buy an avatar for only $25. I had never sold an avatar at that point, you know, but I made it sound like I had been doing this, and $25 was a big, you know,
big drop, yeah,
a big steal, you know, and I did like a giveaway where I did like four drawings for somebody. I had so many orders for avatars at the end of that 2 weeks, it kept me busy for like 3 months.
Wow.
And I used that to buy an iPad Pro.
Nice.
And, you know, at that point I'm like, wow, am I a professional? Because I got paid?
Yep, you are. You are.
It was still a long time before I could really identify with me being an illustrator. And I don't know when, I can't give you a specific moment, but there was a moment maybe a couple of years ago that I had like this dawning, like, I really am an illustrator now. I've done this enough. I've got enough skills. I'm confident that I could draw whatever I put my mind to. I'm an illustrator.
Yeah, that's for sure. And then you sort of look back after that 3 months of work and thought, man, the discount should have been for $50 each.
Yeah.
It's funny that you say that. So I had a similar journey. I grew up I did a lot of drawing and stuff, but I also learned to be a designer. And as a designer, you know, you usually found illustration or you hired illustrators, you bought photography or you hired a photographer, and you were sort of the maestro that put it all together in a great way. But I always really admired illustrators back in the late 80s, early 90s. There were a few that I really loved and tried to mimic them the best I could when I had opportunity. So I did do illustration, but I always felt like an imposter for a long time. And then probably right around mid-2000s, I started getting contracts to do illustration work. Specifically, the big one I think that sort of got me thinking this way was one of the coffee companies who produced coffee machines hired me to do coffee illustrations. So I did quite an extensive illustration series for them. And that led to, you know, that was about the same time that sketchnoting was starting to take off for me. Mm-hmm. And the sketchnoting led me to go to Basecamp's event. And so I did sketch notes there, and they saw those, and that led them to connecting with me and making a connection. When they had their book Rework coming up, they reached out and said, "Hey, would you be willing to illustrate that?" I think that was when I kind of felt like an illustrator after that book, like, because I put in so much time. It was 88 illustrations, and I was paid, and it was pretty high visibility with those guys. And it's led, I mean, honestly, that's led to so much work, follow-on work, just that one project for, with them and with many other people. But that, I felt like, was my moment where I said, okay, I'm an illustrator now. I've been paid. It's in a best-selling book, and people seem to really like that work. So I think a lot of times, you know, I grew up in the golden age of illustration as a designer, so my conception of what an illustrator was really high, because I knew some really great illustrators.
Yeah.
And they had amazing skills. Like, I still can't touch those skills. But what I think I realized, and maybe you can speak to this, is it's not that you have some, there's not some marker or grade that says, well, if you do these 37 things, then you're a professional illustrator. It's like, are you getting paid? Do you have a system? Can you produce work that's communicating in a way that attracts people? Like,
yeah.
those are the criteria, right? It's like three things or something, right?
Yeah.
And so if your style is, you know, look at XKCD. He's got a comic that's been running for years, and his style is stick people. Or,
yep.
You know, Diary of a Wimpy Kid. There's an illustrator that produced that work, right? That was intentionally that style. Sounds like maybe it was like your presentation style. So if you're listening and you're sort of thinking like, well, you know, I do HR. I'm not an illustrator, just like David and me and you. It really kind of, it's more in your mind than anything. It's when you get to the point of deciding that I'm an illustrator. Maybe you're not a full-time illustrator. Maybe it's a side gig. But you can still, you know, when people pay you to do illustration work, you're professional. And now you've got an opportunity to progress in your craft. So, and it sounds like that's sort of exactly what happened to you through just simply loving doing it and playing around.
Yeah.
You ended up doing these, you know, profiles for people and doing the stuff in your presentation. What other ways did it express itself? Are there other things that you sort of ended up stumbling into?
Yeah, absolutely. So just, you know, the more that I continued to be visible in the work that I was doing, the more questions I would get asked or inquiries, people would reach out to me and say, hey, I saw this thing that you did, you know, could you do a drawing for me? You know, how much would you charge if you created an illustration for a blog post that I'm creating or a book that I'm writing? And so the posting on social media and things has led to opportunities where I've gotten to create illustrations and artwork for lots of different projects. I probably still undersell myself. You know, I don't charge as much as I probably should, but I enjoy the work. I enjoy those opportunities because it's another opportunity for me to learn something new. And so I've ended up doing logos. I've done lots of swag for companies and events like t-shirts and stickers, other giveaways. I've done book covers, illustrations for books. And what I've been able to do is you know, I said at the beginning, I'm a software developer, but I'm also a software developer turned speaker. And I'm now in a career path where speaking and events and conferences and things are part of my work, where I'm writing content, I'm creating blog posts, I'm creating videos for YouTube, I'm doing streaming, I'm doing lots of activities that are community facing. And I've been able to use my illustration skills to complement the work that I'm doing. So, like, I worked at Okta for a couple of years, which is a security company. They do sign-on stuff. One of the best pieces of content that I created for them that continues to be one of the most successful pieces of content they have is an illustrated guide to OAuth and OpenID Connect. Mm. And I use, you know, these silly drawings to help people understand the terminology and the flow of how the security works with OAuth when you're signing in with a login or something like that. It's such a powerful way to communicate. Mm. And the sketch note thing, I was fortunate that as I was speaking and I got better and better as a speaker, I got to speak at events where they had professional sketchnoters or visual graphic recorders, mm-hmm. visual recorders, whatever the term, you know, that's used. I don't know what all the titles are.
There's a bunch. But
I've been fortunate that I've had several of my talks sketchnoted before, you know, live before an audience. And I've got one of those hanging on my wall behind me. Mm. Melinda Walker from
oh, yeah.
One Squiggly Line.
Yep.
She's sketched a couple of my talks. And I was, you know, even though I was drawing my slides, I had that imposter syndrome, you know, where it's like, I know how to do my thing, but what she does or what sketchnoters do is like blowing my mind. It's like, how do you do that? You know, I yeah. could never do anything like that. And then I checked myself like, well, maybe you can. Maybe it's just something, you know, another skill that you can learn. So I started I have lots of opportunities to go to people's talks because mm-hmm. I'm at lots of conferences. I start sketching people's talks and giving them, you know, taking a picture or sending them, you know, because I did a little bit of analog as well as digital mm-hmm. and sending that to them. And people were like, oh, this is amazing. This is awesome. And I'm like, well, I'm glad you haven't seen, you know, real sketch notes because this is nothing. This is nowhere near what a professional can do. But people really appreciated it and would talk about it. And it led to, you know, connections with, you know, people that I admire because I was, you know, these are other speakers or other people in the community that I, you know, sketch their talk and suddenly I'm now friends with them.
Yeah.
You know, it's really cool. And you're kind of the same way. It's like, I really admired your books and, you know, your workbook and everything on sketch notes. I learned so much from your books and as a way of giving back to you, I drew your avatar.
Yeah.
And that was the connection that was made. Mm-hmm. I was so very pleased and still am that you continue to use that avatar. My skills have gotten better, but I'm so proud of that one that I drew for you. It seems it was one of the better ones from that period of time where I was drawing avatars.
It's a classic now, David.
Yeah.
And I think the thing I like about it is you seem to capture, like you found a picture of me when I was smiling and happy, and you seem to capture the essence of what how I perceive myself. So it's really great to share that in my Twitter account. In fact, I probably should be replying it all over the place and I just probably haven't thought about it, but it's really fun. So we'll have, of course, links in the show notes for you if you wanted to see his work and hire David to do your avatar. Sometimes it's nice, even as a designer or a sketchnoter or visualization person, to have somebody else do the work for you, right? Someone who's really toned in, and like you just sort of have a whole process by which you identify, like, what are the characteristics of this person that I can communicate the essence of the person. You're probably really good at that, so might be worth spending a couple bucks and hiring David to do your avatar if that's something you're interested in, so
thank you.
get something cool.
So the sketchnoting thing, you know, as I was creating these free ones, you know, and posting them on social media, that mm-hmm. got some attention, and that led to some opportunities to do sketch notes professionally. My first event was a credit union conference.
Hmm.
Okay, I know nothing about credit unions, but if you want to pay me to come sketch your speakers and sessions and keynotes, I'm glad to do it. And it turned out pretty good. You know, like I used my avatar skills to draw an avatar for each of the speakers. Mm-hmm. Then I did that as ahead of time before mm-hmm. the talk.
Right.
So that it was done, you know, pretty well. And then, you know, just applying the principles of sketchnoting as I come to learn or understand them, to capture everything. And it turned out pretty good. And that led to more opportunities. I did an entire day with MongoDB, which is, in the tech world, database. I should do more of it. I really enjoy it.
Well, that's really great. So it's really fun to see how this one moment, the two moments, right? One was seeing someone else with illustrations and then deciding to do it for yourself. Those two moments really catapulted you into a whole new, I guess you're a whole new career, right? A portion of your career in addition to your speaking. But I mean, it seems like it's touched everything, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, it's part of everything that I do now. Mm. There's not a part of my, even if I'm writing code, I will figure out some way eventually to use a hand-drawn illustration, either in documentation or something, because I just feel like it's such a great way to communicate.
Mm. Well, that's really great. I love hearing these stories and appreciate you sharing yours. I would love to hear what's something that you're working on right now that gets you really excited that you're able to talk about that's not under NDA or secret or something.
Yeah. So I just finished an event in San Francisco with the company that I work for now. I work for a company called Pluralsight that does video training. And when I joined the company, I joined as a developer advocate, which is the kind of work that I do now. The cool thing is the developer advocate team at Pluralsight is under the creative brand team for the company. It's like I'm a kid in a candy shop. The people that I'm surrounded with, besides my own team, are creative professionals who do graphic design, who do illustrations, who work on marketing and different things. So we put on this event in San Francisco. I got to participate with other folks on the creative team to come up with like t-shirt designs and sticker designs, some of the graphics and things that went along with the event. I'm just so thrilled and so grateful that I'm in a position now where I can collaborate with other creative professionals. This is the first time in my short career as an illustrator where I've been able to work with other illustrators.
That's cool.
And to get, going back to that imposter syndrome, to be able to get feedback from other professionals that, hey, my ideas and my creations are good, that validation and encouragement, like, that's huge.
Yeah.
I know people have been buying my artwork for a while. I must attract some people, but to hear other creative professionals tell me that, oh, this idea that you got here is great, let's turn that into a sticker, I love it.
Well, that sounds really great. It sounds like you found a great spot where you're able to fully use all your gifts and your skills to do cool stuff. That's a dream job, so I'm really happy for you.
This episode of the Sketchnote Army Podcast is brought to you by Concepts, an infinite, flexible, creative tool for all your good ideas, available on iOS, Windows, and Android. The new Concept 6 for iOS has exciting new features, including a modernized canvas interface, a freshly structured, easier-to-use gallery that integrates with the iOS Files app, and RGB and HSL color options added to its already extensive Copic color palettes. Concept's infinite canvas lets you spread out and sketch in any direction. Draw and take notes with liquid pens, markers, and brushes in your favorite colors. Everything you draw in Concepts is a flexible vector, so you can move your notes around the canvas or change their color, tool, or size with simple gestures. Drag and drop images onto the canvas and use layers and grids to organize your creative space. When you're ready to share, export straight to your friends or team. Search Concepts in your favorite app store for infinite, flexible sketching.
So I want to shift again. Let's shift to tips. This is my favorite part of the podcast, and that is So I'll frame it for you. Someone's listening, they're into visual thinking, whatever that means, sketchnoting, just sketching, drawing. They feel like they're kind of on a plateau and they need a little encouragement from you, David, to be inspired to keep climbing, to keep going up. What would be three things you might tell that person that would encourage them and help them make the next step?
So this is what I love to be able to do now, because I've been on this journey for a few years, and I've looked back and I've seen how my skills have evolved and gotten mm-hmm. better over time. I've got a story that I love to include in some of my talks how, you know, I get started with drawing. I've drawn some slides. The illustrations are terrible. And then maybe a year later or 2 years later, I'm giving the same talk and I'm thinking, you know what? I can probably do a little bit better job with these illustrations than I did when I originally created them. I'm going to try recreating one of these. Hmm. So I have this side-by-side comparison of the ShamWow meme guy. You know, he's like holding the thing, you know, like, hey, look here. And so I have the original drawing of that, and then I have the one that I created, recreated. And when you put those side-by-side, I was blown away. I was like, I can't believe how far I've come.
Wow.
And so the story that I wanted, or the things that I want to say to people to encourage them is, one, it's a long game, and your skills are going to improve if you do these things. And the things that you need to do are, one, you need to practice. Practice may seem boring and tedious at times, but find some way to make it a regular thing. For me, Twitter and social media were like I said, an accountability partner. Mm-hmm. I use them to motivate me to create more things. But I've also, you know, found ways of like motivating myself. Like I'm gonna commit to creating a inspirational quote. I'm gonna illustrate a quote every day for the month of August, you know, so day one, I find a quote and I illustrate it. By the end of that month, your approach to how you do those drawings, how you illustrate your lettering, how everything about it is going to evolve. And you will look back over the last 30 days and go, wow, I would not have expected just spending 10, 15 minutes a day doing this, I would have improved this much, but you will find yourself improving. So number one is practice. Number two is determination, you know, keeping at it and not giving up. And three is forgiveness. Mm. You need to be able to forgive yourself. Like you're not going to be able to do everything the first time, or the first time you try something new, you're not going to be that great at it. You know, you've got to give yourself some room for error, for, you know, to be patient with yourself, to be forgiving of yourself, and say, okay, that was the first attempt. Let's try it again and keep doing it. I have used, in my personal journey, my engineering and analytic skills as an approach to drawing. And what I have done, sometimes without even thinking about it, is I'm using my engineering side of my brain to say, okay, I really admire this person's work. You know, they're doing something that I wish I could do, or wish I could emulate, or wish I could do something similar to. Mm-hmm. I don't have the same skills or the same creativity that they have. But how can I reverse engineer what they've done? Yeah. How can I decompose based on my current skill set, my knowledge, you know, what things I know about illustration today? How could I attempt to recreate what they have done?
Mm-hmm.
And so I've used, you know, little projects like that where I've looked at someone else's work and say, okay, I know how I work. And if I was going to recreate this, this is how I would do it. I would use, you know, these kinds of layers or these, you know, these kinds of brushes or these kinds of types of layers, you know, if they're like using multiply or, you know, different modes of things, you know, based on the skills that I have at the time, how would I reproduce that? And that has led to some discoveries of like, I don't know yet how to do that kind of thing. And okay, I'll come up with my own way. So I'm completely self-taught. I've never taken a course outside of, you know, like reading your book and a few other folks on how to do sketch notes. I've never taken any formal art classes or anything. So I've probably done it the hard way. Okay. I've figured out things like, shading and color theory and things that probably I should have taken some classes or watched some videos on, but it's, you know, it's all part of the journey.
Mm. Wow, those are great tips. Thanks, David. Very encouraging. Especially I like the one forgiveness. I often use the word grace. Give yourself grace, because you know you have expectations about where you should be and you're not there. And if you let that gap get you down, you're just never going to progress. You just got to not focus on that and focus on where you are. And, you know, things take time. It takes time and experimentation to get it right. And that should be part of the process and accounted for. So that's what these are really great. So David, tell us, where can we find you so we can see all your work and follow you? What, obviously you're on Twitter, but what are some other social media? Do you have a website that we should go to?
Yeah.
What's the best place to reach you?
Yeah, so I do have a website, reverentgeek.com. So I'm Reverent Geek on pretty much everything, Instagram, Twitter. You can find me on LinkedIn, although I don't do a whole lot of don't post a whole lot of illustrations on LinkedIn, but I do occasionally. But Instagram is especially most artwork. Twitter is kind of a mix of art and tech, geeky stuff. And then on my website, reverentgeek.com, I've got some portfolio pages set up where you can see not only some of my avatars, but I've got a section on sketch notes. I've got a page for like graphic design and illustrations that I've done, swag that I've designed or logos and t-shirts and things like that. So you can find a little bit of everything on my website.
Gotcha. Well, you know, it's funny. I've done this podcast like, I don't know, a million times, and I've somehow gotten ahead of myself and forgot to ask you about tools. So let's do that before we wrap it up. We'll wrap it up after this. So start with analog. I assume you'd still use paper and pen and pencil. And so talk about, you know, drawing tools, talk about notebooks, paper. What are the things that you like to use when you do analog work?
Yeah. Well, I hate to disappoint you, but I do almost everything digital.
Wow.
That was my introduction, right?
Mm-hmm. When I
gave my first presentation, I used an iPad to create these terrible drawings, and it kind of stuck. I found that I really enjoyed being able to undo my last thing, you know, instead of erasing. Which, you know, does have its drawbacks too. Now I've gone back and said, okay, now that I have these skills on digital, how can I learn a little bit how to do this analog as well? So I do have, you know, some sketch note books. I've got my favorite pen is the Pilot Precise V5 Extra Fine. Personally, and I use Sharpies. I've got a collection of different colored Sharpies and other alcohol-based things. But the only time I ever use those is when I want to create a card, like for someone in my family, you know, personalized illustration. I've created a few here and there to hang on the wall or whatever. But every time I do something analog, I'm wishing, dang, I wish I could, I wish I could undo that last thing.
Yeah, that's really funny. So it seems like you mentioned that you bought an iPad Pro with the proceeds from doing all the avatars and a pencil, I assume. What is the tool of choice that you like to use?
Well, nowadays it's mostly Procreate. Mm-hmm. But when I started, I used an app called Sketches Pro
by
Taya Sui. Mm-hmm. And I still think it's a great app. I just, there hasn't been a whole, it hasn't evolved much over the last recent years. But as far as like, I still think it's a great app to learn on because it's more simplified. The tools are easier to understand. Less features are, less features. Yeah. The constraints is a good thing. It's that is a feature. Yeah. You know, so I think when somebody's learning how to draw digitally, I think the constraint of an app like Sketches Pro is a good thing. And I still recommend it to people who are getting started because I think it's a good place to start.
Yeah.
But of course, there's lots and lots of videos on YouTube for Procreate. So, and, you know, brushes and you know, all that kind of ecosystem around Procreate. So there's definitely advantages to that too. Mm-hmm. In the last few years, I've also become a fan of Affinity. Mm-hmm. So like Affinity Designer, Affinity Photo, Affinity Publisher. And I've used mostly Affinity Designer on both the iPad and desktop to do some of that graphics illustration work that's not anything that's like vector-based that's not hand-drawn.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wow. Well, that's a great tool set, and it's kind of interesting that you're pure digital. We've run across a few people that are like that, and it makes sense in knowing your story and the way you began that would be your kind of your natural place to be. And I mean, the tools are so powerful now, there's no reason why not to be. So
yeah,
that's really great.
I keep thinking, well, it might be handy to have a sketchbook with me and be able to sketch things, and then I'll do it digitally later. But I feel just as comfortable or more comfortable sketching and, you know, coming up with ideas on the iPad.
Yeah, so maybe you need to have a sale on your profile pics and then buy yourself one of these iPad minis. It does work with a pencil, so you could carry that around like your little sketchbook.
Yeah, I would love to try that. I've always had the largest iPad, and I've kind of been wondering, how would I feel about using a smaller device? You know, would it be frustrating, or would it actually be, you know, like that constraint thing? You know, would it actually help me to do things better, other, you know, different things?
Yeah, I've run an 11-inch and picked one up last year because I needed it for different purposes, and it actually works really well. I mean, the thing about digital drawing is you're doing so much zooming in and stuff. Like at some point, it's just a portal into your drawing, right? So you just zoom into the detail you want and zoom back out.
Right.
So for a portability, if you just want to travel with it or want to go to the cafe and not drag your whole rig along, you can throw that in a pencil in your bag and you're good to go. It's almost like really the equivalent of a sketchbook. So for you as a pure digital guy, that might be a really interesting tool.
One other tool that I recommend for folks to check out is Concepts, the app Concepts, because, you know, for a couple of reasons. One is it's available on pretty much every platform. Mm-hmm. So you can get it for Windows if you're using like a Surface device. And the technology on Windows machines is great. It's usually the apps that are lacking compared to iOS. But Concepts is available on every platform, and Concepts has an infinite canvas. So you're not constrained to a particular canvas size. It's, you know, as far out as you want to, you know, continue to draw, you can. And that lends itself to being a great platform for doing sketch notes because digitally, you know, you've got this advantage over people who use physical analog drawings is that you can do post, you can clean stuff up in, you know, after the, after you're finished. And that's what I've done with, been able to do with concepts on some of the projects that I've done is use as much space as I need to. So sprawl all over the place. And then once it's all over, I'll take, you know, 10 or 15 minutes to rearrange ideas, redraw a few things, but and then, you know, get it all compact and looking more beautiful. Well, like I had a great plan in the beginning.
That's a great suggestion. And we're Concepts has been a sponsor of the podcast for many years. And we love their work. They're great people. And the tool is really fantastic. So definitely check that out too. Well, David, it's been so great to have you on. I can't believe that the podcast interview is already over, but we learned so much about your story. And thanks for being on and sharing with us your story and the way you think and your encouragement. So good to have you in the community.
Thank you for having me.
You are so welcome. You're so welcome. Well, for everyone who's listening or watching, this is another episode of the Sketchnote Army Podcast. Until the next episode, this is Mike. Talk to you soon.
The Sketchnote Army Podcast was created by me, Mike Rohde, and brought to you by Rohde Design Studios. It's produced and edited by Alec Polianis of Amp Creative Studios. The theme music was created by John Schiedemeyer. To support the creation of this show, I invite you to buy one of my books, the Sketchnote Handbook or the Sketchnote Workbook. You can find the books on Amazon or go to peachpit.com and use the code RODY40 for 40% off. Please share this podcast with other visual thinking friends and be sure to leave a nice rating on iTunes or your favorite podcast listening app so others can find the show.